This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of The American Conservative, and others for the 2024 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
Why have over 7 million men between the ages of 25 and 55 checked out of the workforce? Why are they living at home with their parents or perhaps with a relative, many of them on disability? It's a pretty big number, and it seems to be just the tip of the iceberg in a larger trend of men who are just checking out of society altogether. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the struggles of American boys and men, Brenda Hafnera. She's Assistant Director and Senior Policy Analyst for the Heritage Foundation. She has a master's degree in political science from Villanova University, and she's author of a column titled The Tailspin of American Boys and Men. Brenda, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
How would you describe the boy crisis?
I think what unites the crisis of boys and men is really a question. And that question is, how and why are boys and men struggling to flourish in America and indeed around the world? And that struggle is mental, physical, economic, and academic. So, for example, the second leading cause of death for men under 45 years old in the United States is suicide. Only 25% of men in 2020 qualified for military service, men ages 17 to 24, and most were disqualified for problems with drugs, for mental abuse or physical and mental reasons or a combination of those factors. And boys are really struggling in school. Only 20% of boys are at least proficient in writing compared to 41% of girls, which is still not great. And men are earning approximately 40% of college degrees when the earnings prospects for such folks is actually dropping. So more than 7 million men between the ages of 25 and 55 have voluntarily checked out of the workforce. So this is a wide problem.
What are they doing?
So for the most part, they're not taking care of children or pursuing an education, and 5 out of 6 of them cite that the reason that they're unemployed is not because there are no jobs. So we do know that they're spending on average 5.5 hours per day watching television and movies. And of course, there's also the problem of video game addiction and pornography addiction. So they're spending a great deal of time in front of screens, and they're struggling in so many ways. Many of them are addicted to drugs. Half of them take pain medication daily. Many of them are living with a relative who provides the source of the income or living off of disability. So they're really struggling. They're not flourishing in their lives.
Let's talk about some of the roots of this crisis. What is expressive individualism?
So expressive individualism, its intellectual roots go pretty far back, but it really took hold in America in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And it's basically radical autonomy combined with the idea that the inner self is the true self. So it divorces the body and the mind. So it includes things like, I can be my own self-creator, your truth, that sort of psychological pursuit. And it replaces God with the individual, and that I can create my own morality and sees relationships, any kind of relationships, as an impediment rather than as a pathway to human flourishing.
So describe how that expressive individualism has distorted relationships for men and boys.
Well, so the primary driver of the boy crisis is dad deprivation, which is really about the breakdown of the family. And expressive individualism has contributed to that because it's changed the way we've thought about marriage. So traditionally, marriage is viewed as a permanent promise where it's aimed towards the good of both spouses. It makes you less selfish. It roots you in something that's beyond yourself, and it provides a good environment for the raising and education of children. That's the traditional view of marriage, and it's meant to be permanent. Expressive individualism promotes romanticism within marriage, which many people would agree that romantic love is important, but it's not the only aspect of marriage, and it really is more self-focused. So there's this idea that once you're no longer psychologically, emotionally satisfied in your marriage, once you're no longer in love, you're justified and even should find a new spouse. So we see that idea underlining the divorce reforms, most notably no-fault divorce in the 60s. And after those institutional changes, marriage really starts to break down and decline.
You use the term dad deprivation. What is that?
So the primary driver behind the boy crisis is not enough time with dads, and it's particularly detrimental for boys. It's not good for girls either, of course, but boys without fathers have shorter telomeres, and telomeres actually predict your lifespan. And by age 9, children without fathers have telomeres that are 14% shorter, and that damage is 40% greater for boys. So fundamentally, boys need their fathers, and it's really difficult to get the amount of time that boys need with their fathers outside of marriage, outside of the father living and having those day-to-day interactions with their children, because fathers and mothers tend to parent a little bit differently. Fathers tend to play more with their kids, and what that helps with is it helps children to learn the limits of their bodies. It helps with impulse control, and fundamentally, how boys learn how to be good men is by imitating a good man, and the model of their life is their father. So about half of children today will grow up with both parents in the home, and strikingly, boys who do not grow up with both parents are more likely to spend time in prison than to graduate from college.
How has our education system made matters worse for boys?
Yeah, so from the long view, our education structure is just really challenging for boys and for girls in a lot of ways too, that they're sitting still in classroom for 8 hours a day. They're not being able to get up and move, and boys need to be able to move. They learn best kinetically, which is through movement, and movement helps actually develop the brain. So the body and the mind are totally tied together, and now kids are sitting still for long periods of time. The prefrontal cortex of boys takes 2 years longer to develop, and so they're not as good in controlling their impulses. And we've seen that behavioral problems in boys are actually punished more severely than those same behaviors that girls commit. So there seems to be a little bit of bias. And on top of that, we've implemented things like the zero tolerance policies in the 90s. Those were the sorts of policies that punished kind of normal antics of boys, where a boy would bring in a squirt gun to school and automatically, no questions asked, he would be suspended. And that meant that boys fell behind sometimes in education and they really struggled to catch up. And then on top of that, we've also been dialing back recess, and we've really emphasized academic standards in our education rather than developmental standards. And all these shifts have not been good for boys.
You say that changes in the economy have also contributed to the crisis. How would you describe that?
So overall, since the 60s, we've shifted from a domestic manufacturing economy to a global knowledge economy. And what that has meant is, particularly for men without much education and men who are really more interested in physical work than office work, the opportunities have diminished considerably. This is a familiar story to a lot of people, depending on which area of the country you are from. It's the hillbilly elegy story, where there are certain communities in the country where the mines were closed, the factories left, and there wasn't a lot of opportunities for young men who wanted those jobs. Nothing kind of filled the gap. So there's a feeling that there's not a future for these men. And so instead, they've turned to things like opioid addiction. That was the crisis in many of these towns. And 70% of overdose deaths are men. They've turned to crime, and it's not a good environment.
Brenda Hefera is our guest. We're talking about the struggles of American boys and men. We'll go into some more detail on the opioid crisis next. You can meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Has American Christianity Failed at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The LCMS operates the second largest parochial school system in the United States. What can you expect from a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school? There's one race, the human race. And Jesus died for the sins of every man, woman, and child from every land and every nation. Life begins at conception. All life is precious from womb to tomb, and every student, parent, and teacher is created in the very image of God. There's right and wrong, and we know which is which from the Ten Commandments. There are only two sexes, male and female, He created them. Marriage is the lifelong union of one man and one woman. There's such a thing as objective, absolute truth, and it's found in the person and work of Jesus Christ and His Word. To find a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school near you, visit lcms.org/schools.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are talking about the struggles of American boys and men. Brenda Hefner is our guest, Assistant Director and Senior Policy Analyst for the Heritage Foundation. Folks, you have 5 days left to take advantage of the early bird registration fee for the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. You can meet and hear speakers like 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalist Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, and others. The early bird registration fee of $140 includes three meals. On-campus dorm options are available. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th at River Forest, Illinois. So, Brenda, go into more detail. You had mentioned the opioid crisis. Talk about its role.
Right. So the opioid crisis indicates that from 1999 to 2015, there was a per capita increase of 356% in sales of prescription opioid medication. And men accounted for almost 70% of those deaths. Economists have indicated that that crisis, the opioid crisis, could account for 43% of the decline in male labor force participation from 1999 to 2015. And between 1970 and 2000, the U.S. prison population rate rose from about 0.1% to 0.5%. And each additional year behind bars reduces post-release employment propensity by 3.6 percentage points. And again, many of these things are ultimately also tied back to the loss of fathers and the breakdown of the family.
So it sounds like it disproportionately affects men who are less prepared for, at least educationally, for the life ahead.
Yes, the economic factors certainly affect men with a high school diploma or less more than other men. So while the earnings of those men have declined, the earnings of college-educated men and college-educated women have increased. So it has disproportionately affected men without much education. And I would say it also is a story of multi-generational poverty. So after welfare reforms were enacted, women were incentivized and could only get aid if there wasn't a father with a home in the home. And that led to the phenomenon of men exiting the home so that women could get aid for their children. And that actually didn't end up attacking poverty. It just created intergenerational cycles of poverty. So, for example, the success sequence, which is the idea that graduate with at least a high school diploma, find a job, get married, and have children, you have a 3% chance of ending up in poverty. So it's a really powerful tool to disrupt some of these cycles.
Do we see effects? We've been talking about the effects on those kind of on the outer fringes of society. Do we see the effects of these bad ideas even in the general population of men?
Oh, I would say so. I mean, the it's completely true that men and women are interdependent. So when boys and men are struggling, women are without partners. And we're seeing that all the earnings of millennials, all the increased earnings is due to women's earnings. So men have fallen behind in women in terms of education, in terms of income. And women tend to be hypergamous, which means they desire someone who is equal or above them in terms of income or socioeconomic status. It permeates all of society. There's a very interesting book called The Promises I Can Keep, and the authors go to communities where there's a high rate of wedlock out of birth, and they talk to these young women and ask them their story. And one of the things that these women say is when they became pregnant, they grew up and kind of tried to get their lives together for the sake of their child. And that was not necessarily the case for the father of their children. And so they were hesitant to marry him because he was still having problems with drugs or in and out of prison or going out and partying. And they basically said, I didn't want to attach myself to this man because he was irresponsible.
What kind of a picture of the future does all of this paint?
Well, I would say that we have a lot of work to do because this crisis has been widespread and many of it has been occurring for quite some time. So if we really want to move towards solving this crisis, we need to move towards rooting people more within relationships, within community, working towards getting those things that really give people purpose, which is God, family, and country, that these men feel kind of listless, and now it's spreading to women, so it's not a good state of things.
So talk a little bit more about those ideas that and institutions that can counteract the bad ideas that have led to the boy crisis.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, we have to have a narrative about fatherhood and marriage that is aspirational and inspiring, to say that fathers and men are important, they're not toxic, that we would all be lesser without the relationships and friendships and love of our brothers, our sons, our fathers, that men are really important for human flourishing in society, and that fatherhood is something noble, that there are a lot of really bad cultural displays of fatherhood and men, and that's not the story that we want to be promoting. And to get right about what is the purpose of marriage, that romantic love is important, but it's so much beyond that. It's the abiding love between a mother and a father towards both of them and towards their children as well. So trying to renew marriage and making it more of a permanent promise is the first step. On the education front, I would say the most hopeful solution is school choice, because school choice enables parents to evaluate a school and say, is this particular school good for my particular son? Does it have books on the curriculum that my boy is going to be interested in? Are they allowing for recess and for kinetic learning, for boys to be able to get up and move? Do they allow for competition, which boys tend to like? And then finally, in the workforce sphere, I would say that we've promoted for a long time that the only solution is to go to college. And we've promoted that in our narrative as well in our public policies. The Department of Education spends 79 times more on colleges and universities than vocational training. And the men who have been hit the hardest are the men who are interested in physical labor over office work. So dialing that back and offering more opportunities for vocational learning.
Brenda Hefera is Assistant Director and Senior Policy Analyst for the Heritage Foundation. She has a master's degree in political science from Villanova University, and she's author of a column titled The Tailspin of American Boys and Men. You'll find a link to this column and to the Heritage Foundation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Brenda, thank you.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Friday on Issues Cetera, we'll talk with 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines about the Biden administration's Title IX ruling allowing men to compete in women's sports. We'll discuss the benefits of liturgical worship with Dr. Jordan Cooper, and we'll talk with Pastor Andrew Packer about Taylor Swift's latest album. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Criticism.
I just had to call in to respond to this week's installment of Never Trump Drivel from Terry Mattingly.
Compliments.
I love the interviews and insights because they help me battle the slings and arrows of outrageous theology in practice.
Clarification.
Is there a point where, without baptism, infants go to heaven, and after which time they go to hell if they're not baptized?
The Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382.